Welcome back to Library Voices SC. I'm Pamela.
And I'm Anderson.
And we just finished the Arbuthnot Lecture 2017 yesterday with an amazing author and lecturer, Jacqueline Woodson. And we are honored to be sitting here with you today. Jacqueline, welcome to the show.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here.
So many of our readers and listeners, I'd say most of them, probably know at least a little bit about you. But let's just give the audience a taste of some history, if I can get this right. And it is National Poetry Month, right? So let's start with that fact about you. You were named the Young People's Poet Laureate by the Poetry Foundation in 2014. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. It's a two-year term, so it's almost up.
Almost over. It's just amazing. I love poetry. I love that you are the Poet Laureate for young people. Voices are so important for our young people, and to have you be a professional voice, a writer, a poet for them is outstanding. So additionally, Jacqueline, you have lots of awards, including the Margaret A. Edwards Award for Lifetime Achievement, Newbery Award Honors, Coretta Scott King Awards, National Book Awards, and there's loads of others, but we do like to keep it short and sweet on Library Voices SC. And I dare say that many of your books tackle tough topics, including incarceration, child abuse, interracial relationships, and so much more. But you do it in such a graceful, gentle way sometimes that sometimes we don't even know the lesson that we're learning. So, wow. Let's get started with hopefully an easy question. What are you currently reading?
So in my office now is a stack of about 100 books because I'm chairing the National Book Award Committee this year in fiction. Why, when you ask me the question, I kind of laugh because I'm like, reading. But I'm currently reading for absolute joy a book by T.R.E. Jones that's coming out next year. I know Marriage is in the title, but I forgot the rest of the title. But she's one of my favorite writers, and I'm reading the galley of her new book.
Oh, nice. What writers along your career and life have inspired you, and in what way?
So definitely James Baldwin, because he was a writer who was both an activist and a writer and spoke about issues concerning race in America and just wrote beautifully, whether he was writing fiction or essays. Of course, Toni Morrison and Raymond Carver and Langston Hughes and Gwendolyn Brooks. I mean, my list goes on and on, from poets to fiction writers to essayists. I just had a lot of writers who helped me get to this point merely by writing books that I learned from.
Right.
And on a more personal level, how do you think it was that moving from South Carolina to New York really affected your writing and, on a larger scale, really your life?
I don't think I would be the writer I am if I didn't have both places. I think that both places taught me how to speak many languages on the page and gave me insight, as I talked about last night, kind of being in the world but not of the world and looking at the world from this vantage point of an outsider. That was really helpful to me. But I feel like so much of the South is still with me and so much of New York of the North, too. So I'm just grateful for both places. But really, so many of the stories wouldn't be told if I didn't have both places.
Are you able to identify any pieces of that Southern culture that you still have with you?
All of it. I say hi to strangers, much to my kids' dismay.
And in New York, how's that go over in New York?
A lot of them don't say hi back. You know, it's so interesting to be here. And, you know, I get on the elevator and there's a whole bunch of older white guys going off to play golf. And they're all like, good morning, how's the day going? And that just doesn't happen in New York. And so, it doesn't stop me from saying hello. And a lot of people don't respond. But gathering. I have Sunday dinner with my extended family every single Sunday. It feels very Southern to me. Gardening. I do a lot of gardening because my grandfather was a gardener. But yeah, a lot of the South, there's a certain light in New York that happens around the end of April and early May that reminds me of the South.
One of the young women last night asked a wonderful question that I wanted to repeat for our listeners. How do you talk about difficult topics so openly?
I think the thing is, they're not difficult to me. you know, there's so much a part of my everyday and the conversations I'm having with family and friends and acquaintances every single day. So it's just a natural part of a dialogue, an ongoing and old dialogue. And it's always kind of surprising to me when people see them as difficult. I mean, you know, last night I talked about the issue of the bathrooms, right? And I think that's a big conversation happening, right? So we see it in the news, and aren't we all having it around our dinner tables? And the conversation of race, I mean, race in this country right now is on fire, and there's so much work to do. And isn't that a conversation we're having with our kids and with our grandparents, right, and with the people who are going to have an impact on the change that happens? So, and I think that because we talk about it so much, it doesn't feel difficult. And I think that's the great point of talking about it so much, is that it gets to that point where it becomes part of the everyday conversation.
That's awesome. It's so true. Sharing your voice with each other is important, and being able to share your voice with people who maybe don't have the same views is maybe even more important sometimes.
It is. And it doesn't have to be a fight, right?
Right.
Because we're all human here. And someone who votes differently than I do has their reasons, and to them are very valid. And I want to hear those. And it's not always, I think one thing that happened was people thought, well, someone doing something, they were doing it against them.
Right.
As opposed to taking themselves out of the equation to see that the person is doing it for themselves.
Right.
And I remember people asking if I was anti-white, and I said, no, I'm not anti-white. You know, I have this biracial family and so many white folks in my family, but I am pro-black, and that has nothing to do with being anti-white. And, you know, I'm pro-woman, but that has nothing to do with being anti-male. And so I think that is how we begin to have the dialogue to say, I'm not mad at you. I just want to understand.
Absolutely. So when you are asked, and I'm sure you've been asked this dozens of times probably, what advice you have for children or teens or even adults who aspire to be writers, especially those who might have a hard time sharing their experience, what do you say to them?
Well, you know, we invented this thing called writer's block. And I think that it doesn't exist, that what people have decided to name as a means of hiding behind it is actually fear. And I think that so much of people not telling their stories is this fear of what could happen if they do. And you have to write through that fear. So I think, like I said last night to the young person who asked, like, what is there to lose by telling your story? And you have to write. If you want to be a writer, you have to write. And you have to write the truth, whether it's hidden behind a character you make up or inside a poem or in an essay. However it comes out, that's going to help you get the best writing on the page. But if you're fearful, you're going to write dribble. And the world doesn't need more of that.
No, we don't. What role do you see libraries play in alleviating that fear?
Libraries are the best thing that ever happened to societies, because there's a fearlessness there, right? Especially in public libraries. I know there's some fear in school libraries because of the backlash of parents and all of that. But in public libraries, I mean, people will go in and steal books they don't want on the shelf, or like maybe rally against those books. But librarians have historically been resistors, right? And not allowing that to happen. So you can walk into a library and have access to all of this information you might not be able to get in your school library or in your classroom. All the different types of people telling stories, all the different ways they're telling stories, all the different stories there are to tell. I mean, when I wrote Visiting Day, which is a book about a girl who goes to visit her dad in prison, it was because I had grown up with an uncle who was incarcerated, and I'd never seen a book about it. So I thought I was the only one who had a family member in jail. And, you know, again, I didn't know about mass incarceration, but now knowing about mass incarceration, I know that I'm not the only one, and that book is necessary for so many young people. And I think young writers need to use their libraries to see what's out there and to see their own possibility. So that's the role the library played for me as a young person. I mean, I was there every day after school. It babysat me, but also I had to be there until my mom got home from work. But I mean, the librarian knew that she was babysitting us all. But we, as a result, we had to be well behaved and read and right. do our homework and take out books. And as a result, we had this massive collection of books at our fingertips.
So then what is your earliest or maybe fondest memory of a library?
So it's not my earliest, but I was thinking about this yesterday. When we got to New York City, one of the first things my mom did was take us to the public library around the corner, the Washington Irving branch in Bushwick, and got us each a library card. And I think part of it was she knew she was going to go to work. We were going to come home. We were going to come from walk from school to that library, and we were going to be there until 5:45 when she picked us up. And we had to be active members of the library. And we had to, I think at that time we were allowed to take out 7 books. And so, you know, we would each take our books out. She, when they were due, she'd bring us back. And I remember once she filled the shopping cart with overdue books that she pulled off the shelves that we had, that had gotten mixed up with all our other stuff. And she dragged the four of us to the library with the overdue books. And she was so mad. She was so mad. And she, you know, paid for all these overdue books and got our library, you know, our library cards were all jacked up by that time because we had charges on them. But you know, we didn't get allowance for like 3 months. Like she was like, this is, but I just have that image of her in that shopping cart and her walking ahead of us like that her kids had failed her this way. And it was also embarrassing, right? It was this librarian who was this black woman who like had half glasses that she looked over and I, you know, just scowling. That's when librarians were still mean.
I have those very same memories being that mom. And I'm a librarian, so it's even
funny.
It's horrible. So I feel that story deep inside of me.
Fight the stereotypes.
Right. I have lots of late finds. In fact, I have to go pay some today on my way home. I talked with a few middle schoolers who had some interesting questions, if you don't mind me asking.
Not at all.
One of my favorites was, as a writer, what would you choose as your mascot or avatar or spirit animal?
You know, I...
It's a tough question.
I guess it's a tough question because...
Why?
I'm sorry, middle school.
Sure.
But why?
Like, because they're in and everything now, right?
Has avatars, spirit animals.
Or mascot.
But that's not going to make me a better writer.
There you go.
So,
The honest answer.
I mean,
that's the important thing is to be honest.
Yeah. So I can't, it's not the question I'm thinking of right now because it won't help any of us.
There you go.
I if they want to know the truth, something about me, I love my dog. My dog is a German Shepherd and she's not my spirit animal, but she's my dog. So she's real.
That's awesome. How old is your dog?
She's 8. And she's a pain in the butt, but she's a great dog.
That's great. And how do you select your names of your characters?
It's a good question because sometimes the names come to me right away. Mm-hmm. I remember before Children, which I call Jacqueline Woodson BC, I had all these names that I loved and I would just use them for my characters. And then when I had kids, I had run out of names. So I had to stop using names I loved. But I remember writing after Tupac and Dee Foster and not being able to figure out the narrator's name forever and ever and ever and ever. And then I got to the middle of the book and I realized why. So sometimes they say the story knows more than you do about what it's trying to say. And that book definitely did. But usually I use names I love. And now that both my kids are named, I can go back to finding other names.
So sometimes it's a good idea to keep writing, even though you might not have some details that are really important to the story, like a name of a character.
Exactly.
Keep writing the story through
and let it help you figure out what it's trying to say. So with after Tupac and Dee Foster, it was about identity. I mean, Dee Foster, these girls thought she was one of their best friends and realized they didn't even know her real name. And then the narrator who's having this conversation with us, you get to the end of the book and you realize you don't know her name, right? But if I had given her a name, it would have been a completely different story. So
it would have unfolded completely differently.
Completely.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah. So yeah, always just keep writing.
Just keep writing. The last question, if you weren't a writer, what career would you choose?
I love how kids always ask that. Remember the kid asked that last night?
Yep.
It's so funny because are they already thinking about their secondary career? Like, choose the one you love the most. Life is so short. Mm. Well, the same answer, I would play for the NBA. But now I would play for South Carolina. You know, I love them being Mississippi. But I would want to be a ball player. I would want to be a concert pianist. I have a lot of dream jobs. I don't play the piano. I don't play ball that well. But if I couldn't be a writer, that's what I want to do.
Well, we're glad you're a writer.
Thank you. We're thrilled. I am too. Thanks, Anderson. Thanks, Pamela.
Thank you. And thank you for being here for Library Voices SC. I'm Pamela.
And I'm Anderson.
And we're keeping it short
and sweet.